This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. 234,000 people have died as a result of the COVID-19 virus globally, and health officials have now confirmed more than 3.3 million cases. In the United States, nearly 64,000 people have died from it, and there are nearly 1.1 million infections. U.S. President Donald Trump is speculating that China could have unleashed the coronavirus on the world due to some kind of horrible mistake, and his intelligence agencies say they are still examining a notion put forward by the president and aides that the pandemic may have resulted from an accident at a Chinese lab. Scientists suggest the virus spread from an animal to a human. The intel agencies did debunk one conspiracy theory, is that saying that they have concluded that the new virus was not man-made or genetically modified. China said speculation such as Trump's unfounded and purely fabricated out of nothing. Hundreds of protesters, some armed, gathered at Michigan State Capitol in Lansing Thursday, objecting to Governor Gretchen Whitmer's request to extend emergency powers to combat COVID-19. Many people at Thursday's American Patriot rally, including militia group members carrying firearms, appeared to be ignoring state social distancing guidelines as they clustered together within 6 feet of one another. Police allowed more than 100 protesters to peacefully enter the Capitol building, where they crammed shoulder to shoulder and sought access to legislative chambers, some carrying long guns, few wearing face masks. The Chinese National Health Commission on Friday said by the end of reporting Thursday, the Chinese mainland reported 12 new confirmed COVID-19 cases, of which 6 were imported, 5 from Shanghai and 1 from Fujian province. No death was reported Thursday on the mainland, according to the commission. This is VOA News. Beijing will open public parks to visitors over the 5-day May 1st holiday, but a 30% capacity as coronavirus cases subside in the country where the pandemic began. Large-scale group activities will be put on hold, and visitors will have to book tickets online. Beijing has lowered its level of emergency response to the virus, but temperature checks and social distancing remain in force. Key tourist sites, such as the ancient Forbidden City, passed home to Chinese emperors, remain closed to the public. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said Britain was now past the peak of its coronavirus outbreak and promised to set out a lockdown exit strategy next week. Holding his first news conference Thursday since recovering from COVID-19 and a day after his fiancée gave birth, Johnson said to Britons to stick with restrictions designed to slow the spread. He said there would be a menu of options on how the lockdown could be relaxed, but he didn't give any further details or time frame. Britain now has the second highest official COVID-19 death toll in Europe, with nearly 27,000 deaths. Thursday also marked the deadline for Britain to reach its target of 100,000 daily tests. Latest figures showed that they were more than 18,000 short of that number a day earlier, with figures for Thursday due to be published on Friday. Puerto Rico is taking its first tentative steps in relaxing a nearly two-month lockdown for the coronavirus pandemic, while health officials warn that the U.S. territory is relying on faulty statistics and has not yet seen its peak of cases. The governor, Wanda Vasquez, announced Thursday that starting Monday, certain sectors, including finance, construction, and manufacturing, will reopen. Other businesses also allowed to reopen on weekdays include laundromats, moving services, and those that repair elevators and air conditioning units. The retail trade, barbershops, and beauty salons will be allowed to operate beginning in mid to late. The lockdown for everyone else is being extended until May 25th. The Trump administration has suspended immigration court hearings for asylum seekers waiting in Mexico through June 1st, bowing to coronavirus concerns. The move also extends a state of limbo for those locked down in Mexican migrant shelters. The remain in Mexico policy has become a key pillar of the administration's response to an unprecedented surge of asylum-seeking families at the border. The policy has drawn criticism for forcing people to wait in highly dangerous Mexican cities. The Justice Department estimated in late February that there were 25,000 people waiting in Mexico for hearings in U.S. court. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Philadelphia in Washington. Today is Friday, the first day of May, and here are some of the stories we are covering. African health officials say the continent has taken effective measures to curb the spread of COVID-19.
What is very encouraging, and I'd just like to emphasize this, is that we have a number of countries that have reported zero cases over a couple of weeks, but they put in place some early measures which have produced some results.
The UN Refugee Agency warns COVID-19 could affect millions in South Sudan. More than 116 people have died of floods in Kenya in the last 2 weeks. A Tanzanian rights group has given the government 24 hours to stop the planned prosecution of a lawyer. And ahead of World Press Freedom Day, the Eswatini government says it supports press freedom.
The freedom of the press in Eswatini is enshrined in the constitution. Government fully supports a free and healthy press, one that maintains a degree of integrity and upholds journalistic principles and ethics.
Sabelo Dlamini is the acting spokesperson for the Eswatini government. And analysts say the return of military figures who destabilized post-election Guinea-Bissau. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. African health officials say the continent has taken what appears to be effective measures in curbing the spread of coronavirus. While they note that lockdowns in some countries have had positive effects in slowing transmission, scientists say that the enduring economic and social harm of lockdowns could soon trump scientific considerations. Experts spoke to journalists a day before the continent's hotspot, South Africa, prepares to ease its restrictions. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Health officials across the continent have mostly succeeded in urging leaders to implement strict measures to combat the spread of coronavirus. And it may be no coincidence that the sub-Saharan African region continues to have the world's lowest caseload and the fewest number of deaths. But the crisis is far from over, says Dr. Matsidiso Moeti, World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa.
In terms of the situation in Africa, we are continuing to see an increase in cases. I think our outbreak is continuing. We are seeing case fatality rate in the region of about 3.9%. We have a couple of countries that have a higher case fatality rate. What is very encouraging, and I'd just like to emphasize this, is that we have a number of countries that have reported zero cases over a couple of weeks. So these are admittedly relatively small countries, Namibia, Mauritania, and Seychelles. But they put in place as well some measures, early measures, starting with testing, contact tracing, which have produced some results. And then we are very concerned about West Africa, where we are seeing community spread in a significant number of countries compared to others.
In South Africa, the country with the continent's highest caseload, Health Minister Dr. William Kize says a strict 35-day lockdown, which officially ends Friday, has made a difference.
We are actually seeing a slightly different trajectory that has pushed the peak of the epidemic to around September in the best case scenario, or maybe July in the worst case scenario. And this is going to be related to how we ease off the lockdown so that the president has called for a risk-adjusted easing of the lockdown to take into account the food security issues, to take into account the economic recovery that needs to be supported.
Mkhize noted that the reopening will be slow and not drastically different from the current situation. The next slower stage will include a curfew, limits on outdoor exercise, and the obligatory use of face masks in public. Large gatherings remain banned, and many so-called non-essential businesses remain shuttered. Professor Kojo Ansakorum, an epidemiologist in Accra, Ghana, says it's decisions like this that keep leaders up at night. How do they protect public health while also keeping other sectors of their country strong?
If you're in a place like Accra, where there's a large majority of people in the informal sector, for example, then that advice has to be weighed on or has to be taken in addition to what will happen to that population, which probably have to go out on a daily basis to get their daily bread. And so you can make your pure scientific advice, but you have to be aware that it has to be managed in the context of all the other things.
As of April 29th, Africa had about 23,000 reported cases of COVID-19 and just over 900 deaths, fewer than any other region in the world. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The UN Refugee Agency is warning of potentially devastating consequences for millions in South Sudan if the COVID-19 pandemic takes root and spreads uncontrollably throughout the country. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
South Sudan, the world's youngest nation, was mired in war for decades before it gained independence in 2011, and for most of the time since. Years of conflict, floods, a recent swarm of locusts and other natural disasters have left millions of people unable to meet their most basic needs. The UN Refugee Agency warns this weakened population might be unable to ward off the coronavirus pandemic. To date, says UNHCR spokesman Baba Baloch, only 35 cases of the disease have been confirmed in South Sudan. But if the virus spreads rapidly, he tells VOA, this situation could quickly turn into a humanitarian crisis.
The threat of the pandemic, this could have deadly consequences for people where health structures are very weak, where 1.7 million people are displaced, where communal fighting is a real threat today.
Baloch says the international community must step forward urgently and do something to prevent this from happening. He says preparations to tackle the pandemic should be taken now while the numbers of infections are still low.
This is the time that we want to use to put in place infrastructure or support authorities and people on the ground, that they are well prepared in case the numbers are going to go up. But let's not forget that the way this pandemic has been spreading, if you're not prepared, we could see many lives in danger in South Sudan.
The South Sudanese government has a high-level task force leading the battle against the coronavirus. Meanwhile, the UN Refugee Agency, working with South Sudanese authorities, has constructed 5 emergency treatment centers. 5 more are set to be built in the coming weeks. The UNHCR is appealing to international donors to be more generous than they have been so far. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The acting spokesperson for the government of Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, says the Southern African kingdom supports freedom of the press as enshrined in its constitution. But Sebalo Dlamini says the threat posed by the COVID-19 pandemic is so serious and that the government will not condone the dissemination of false and misleading information on the social media. Sebalo was responded to claim by Eswatini journalist Zuele Martin Dlamini, who said he fled the country because police had been ordered to assassinate him for writing that King Mswati III had coronavirus and that the government was not forthcoming with information. Acting spokesperson Sebalo Dlamini says the allegations are false and that King Mswati III is well and healthy.
Eswatini is a country that respects and holds sacrosanct the right to life. Alleged orders of assassination such as this do not happen in this country. It is contrary to our culture, our values, our ethos as a people.
Did the police receive orders to arrest journalist Dlamini, and for what reason?
This too is a distortion of facts. We have a constitution in this country which you are proud of that guarantees the right to freedom of expression. We honor and uphold our constitution to the best of our ability and protect the values it represents. It is important to put matters into perspective in this instance. The threat of the COVID-19 pandemic is severe, and we in Eswatini, like in many other countries around the world, have put in place regulations to ensure media outlets and social media users do not deliberately inject misinformation into the public discourse. In the past weeks, we have observed false and misleading claims masquerading as news on social media and other platforms. Mr. Zueli Dlamini's platform, for instance, has claimed that the king is gravely ill with COVID-19 and that government is holding back and not presenting full and truthful information about COVID-19. This is patently untrue, as His Majesty is well and is healthy. False information and false rumors, such as the ones peddled by Mr. Zueli Dlamini, are dangerous in the midst of this COVID-19 pandemic. It is tantamount to screaming fire in a crowded theater. And in accordance with the advice of the World Health Organization and as a good steward of public health, we have put together mechanisms that ensure that only accurate information is presented by the media and the public. Anyone found to have deliberately sown misinformation about the pandemic must be held to account, and this includes facing prosecution.
Eswatini Constitution guarantees freedom of expression. If this is the case, why is it, quote, a crime to criticize the king?
No order was issued by the king to the police to arrest Zweli Dlamini. The police were merely working according to law, as Zweli is wanted for criminal offenses, which include contravening COVID-19 regulations.
What can you tell us about journalist Eugene Dube? Did the police arrest him earlier this month for writing negative articles about King Mswati III?
The information we have is that police were executing a search warrant in relation to contravention of COVID-19 regulations. Eugene Dube was never arrested, but taken for questioning and released. If he feels the police overstepped their mandate, he has a right to report or seek legal recourse.
Sebalo Dlamini is the acting spokesperson for the Eswatini or Swaziland government. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. More than 116 people have died in the last 2 weeks due to floods that has affected more than 29 counties in Kenya. Kenya's devolution cabinet secretary, Eugene Wamawa, said more than 100,000 households have been affected. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
The ongoing heavy rains in the country have caused increasing volumes of water spilling from lakes and dams. More than 116 people have lost lives in the last 2 weeks as thousands are displaced in at least 29 counties of Kenya, the western region of Kenya being the most hit. Speaking in Nairobi, Devolution Cabinet Secretary Eugene Wamalwa has asked Kenyans living in flood-prone areas to move to safer grounds as the government struggles to save the situation.
We have several counties that have been affected by floods due to the heavy rains that are ongoing. They have suffered landslides. As a ministry in charge of special programs, we have put measures in place to ensure we give support to all families affected. We have been able to dispatch over 40,000 bags of rice and other food and non-food items to over 24 counties affected by floods.
The government is also putting into consideration Ministry of Health guidelines as it distributes relief foods to affected families who are camping at local schools after their houses were submerged. Earlier, in his State of Nation address, President Uhuru Kenyatta had asked Kenyans to follow instructions from the Meteorological Department of Kenya that has warned of heavy rains in the country.
Heavy rains in many parts of our countries also, unfortunately, led to flooding, landslides, in some cases, loss of life. We continue to warn our fellow Kenyans. Coming out of last year, where the rains were still very heavy, and now are heavy once again, are increasing. And I would request and really plead with all Kenyans to follow the advice that is coming from the Ministry of Interior, that is coming from our meteorological people.
Kenya Red Cross warns the floods might increase and the country should be ready. Aisha Mohamed, Secretary General Kenya Red Cross, said that it's very challenging for the organization to offer food and shelter as they also try to observe World Health Organization regulations of keeping distance in curbing COVID-19.
So the effects are great, and unfortunately it comes also in a situation of the coronavirus, where we are saying that even as we respond, even as people move, we still need to be conscious that it is not just like every other time when we move. We have to be careful that we do not also increase the risk of transmission. Assessments are still ongoing, rivers are still overflowing, so we expect this number actually to rise in the next few days.
In Kano Plains, Ombaka Village, located next to River Nyando of Kisumu County, residents are stranded as most of them are forced to move a number of times to safer places. Jester Sabongo, a resident in the area, is calling upon both the county and national government to find a long-lasting solution for the residents.
The population here in our school is overstretched because of the flood havoc. And we've been speaking, even from the last flood havoc, that the solution of this problem is building of dike. There's a blockage at the end of River Nyando, which is making the water to come back. So we urge the county government, the national government, to do something.
The signing of the Paris Agreement on Climate Change in the year 2016, top scientists warned of the effects left by climate change on the African continent, among them floods. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Coalition is calling on the government of President John Magufuli to immediately start plans to prosecute attorney Albert Msando without preconditions. The civil society group says the arrest and the planned prosecution of Msando is a violation of his fundamental rights to free speech guaranteed by the Constitution. The remarks come after police announced plans to prosecute Msando after he was quoted as underscoring the importance of accurate reporting by journalists about the fight against the spread of the coronavirus. Onesmo Olenguruma is the national coordinator of the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Forum. He tells viewers Peter Clotty that his organization has issued a 24-hour ultimatum to the police to stop plans to prosecute attorney Albert Msando.
Yes, we've actually issued a statement immediately yesterday after being informed that an advocate, Albert Msando, was actually arrested yesterday. We communicated with his lawyer and he confirmed yesterday that he was arrested because of his recently uttered statement concerning the pandemic here in Tanzania, especially in Arusha. And today, also the police spoke with media, informing that the advocate, Albert Msando, will be taken to court for inciting statement that he has uttered a few days ago in Arusha by informing journalists that the situation in Arusha is devastating. Therefore, they should actually take their role as journalists to inform the public on what is happening. That's what Msando said, and according to police, that is contrary to the laws of the country, and then he has to be taken before the court of law.
According to the police, he violated the law, and some supporters of the CCM are saying that it is necessary that those who violate the law should be punished in accordance with the law. As a human rights defender, what is your reaction to these statements coming from both the CCM and the police?
Of course, Tarol, we don't want to get into that politics because there is also some information that matter is also politically affiliated with some of them, because he's also from Arusha, he's also from CCM, and we are also approaching election. We don't want to dwell into those political statements. For us, as lawyers, our focus is if someone is accused for committing a certain offense, then it is only the court of law that has the constitutional mandate to prove such allegation. So for now, because the matter is going to be taken to court, let's go and allow the court to determine the matter and put aside these political statements that are always uttered behind the curtain. Of course, I know the reasons, there might be so many reasons why people are speaking of that, but we don't want to dwell into that at this time where we have this very important matter in front of us to deal with, that is pandemic COVID-19 virus.
Onesmo, some Tanzanians are saying that the lawyer's statement could create panic as this pandemic rages on and as the government implements measures to fight the COVID-19 spread in Tanzania. So that is why the police had to take action. What do you say to that?
It's a matter of legal debate whether saying that the situation in Arusha is devastating or the situation is alarming, it by itself creates a panic or falls within the definition of the law as a statement that invites public attentions and so many other things of that nature. That matter has to be left for a decision of the court. Lawyers will debate around that particular area, and then judges will, at the end of the day, come into conclusion as to whether the statement uttered by the lawyer amounts to a violation of the law, that is to say the statements create panic or any sort of public attention, that is to say. So for me, as of now, I'm not in a better position, of course, to say yes or not, because the matter is already in court.
Onesmo Olenguruma is the national coordinator of the Tanzania Human Rights Defenders Forum. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Dar es Salaam. The return of some military figures to politics in Guinea-Bissau could destabilize the post-election peace process, says Pauline Maurice Tupan, a researcher at the Institute for Security Studies. Tupan recently released a report about the risks that the reassertion of military figures could pose.
But we have to stress that the army in Guinea-Bissau have often played a political role. It is responsible for several coups d'état, the last one being the one of April 2012. But since then, the army has not interfered in the country's politics. And the chief of staff of the Guinea-Bissau Force Army, Biagin Antam, appointed in 2014, used to say that the soldier would henceforth remain outside the political quarrel in Guinea-Bissau. However, the current position of the military hierarchy regarding Mbalo undermines his neutrality and suggests that there is an attempt by some faction of the army to influence the politics. These are the perpetrators of the 2000 coup d'etat who still under the sanction of United Nations. And most of political analysts in Guinea-Bissau talk about Antonio Ndiaye, who is the one who led the coup d'etat in 2012.
Antonio Ndiaye was at the inauguration of Mbalo quite prominently.
Yes, he was at the inauguration, and most of analysts think that he's supporting Mbalo, and his support is not free, and it's based on his own interest, and I think that he will continue to support Mbalo as long as there is interest, and their interest, if I can say, are preserved.
How does the recent announcement of ECOWAS that they basically endorsed Mbalo's presidency last week, how does that affect this stability?
Yes, the ECOWAS has demonstrated lack of coherence in the management of the post-electoral crisis in Guinea-Bissau, but we have to remember that since the coup d'etat of 2012, ECOWAS has been the key player in the stabilization process of the country. And after also the beginning of the crisis in 2015, ECOWAS has also initiated mediation process that led to the signature of the Conakry Agreement in 2016. The incoherence in the management of the post-electoral crisis has weakened the institution in Guinea-Bissau that were involved in the management of the crisis, namely the Supreme Court and the National Electoral Commission. Because when ECOWAS acknowledged the final result, second round of the presidential election, even though the electoral dispute has not yet been clarified by the Supreme Court, and after that, ECOWAS has strongly condemned the self-inauguration of Mbalo because ECOWAS considered it as illegal. So I think that this contradictory position of the ECOWAS in managing the crisis in Guinea-Bissau have weakened all the stabilization process.
That was Paul Maurice Toupin, a researcher at the Institute for Security Studies. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Senegal's capital, Dakar. And that's it for this Friday, May 1st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
How will the coronavirus pandemic affect Russian President Vladimir Putin's plan to stay in power beyond 2024, the end of his current term? Two leading experts on Russia and U.S.-Russian relations talk with host Carol Castiel about how the pandemic is upending President Putin's domestic and international political aspirations. Listen this Saturday and Sunday on Encounter on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to sukus, Afrobeat to dumbolo and makosa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clot, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.